I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to explore a moment that is a milestone both for a man and an Indianapolis institution. Henry Leck will step down as artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir at the end of this month, after leading that iconic choir for 30 years. We'll take a look at his tenure and get a glimpse of what the future holds both for him and the Children's Choir. My guest will be the man himself, Henry Leck. If you'd like to join the conversation, to ask a question, share a memory, or just say thank you, please call 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. If you notice that our theme song seems a little different here coming into the show, that's because in honor of the special occasion of this show, we've made a slight change. We're going to enter the discussion and exit it at every point with selections from the Indianapolis Children's Choir, because we are talking today with the founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir, Dr. Henry Leck, who is retiring at the end of this month after 30 years as the leader of the Children's Choir. If you would like to join the conversation, just to call in and share a memory, or even just to say thank you, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Henry, welcome to the program. It is good, John, to have you here. Got to be somewhat of a bittersweet occasion for you.
Yeah, I think it is. I'm looking forward to a new life, but also with a certain amount of regret because it is a switch in priorities. But it's one that's been planned for a long time and one that I've worked through, so I think that's fine.
Well, and walk us through a little bit. You are still on the job.
Yes.
And we'll be on the job through April 30, right?
Actually, I'm officially turning over the title Artistic Director on April 30. That's correct.
Okay.
But I still will be employed full-time until the end of the fiscal year, end of June, because I'm taking the Children's Choir on tour to Germany and the Youth Chorale on choir to to Vancouver and Seattle. So I'm working full-time, and then actually I'm under contract for 4 more years as a part-time employee, helping with alumni relations and development and that sort of thing.
So you clearly struggle with this concept of retirement here, don't you?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
A little bit.
Yeah, there's even more on my plate, which we can talk about.
So why now? Because obviously you're still staying involved. What prompted you to think that now is the moment to hand over the reins?
Well, you know, if I can give a little bit of historical perspective, I think it was about 12 or 15 years ago, we had an independent study done by JGA, Johnson, Gross, Nicholson Associates, and they made a number of recommendations that we should consider in the organization, and one was planned succession. Because when there's a founder-driven organization, its most vulnerable time is when the founder leaves. Mm-hmm. And so this is a plan that's been in place for 8 or 10 years. And I got to thinking at length about how do I leave the organization strong in every respect. And a person that came to my mind immediately 12, 15 years ago is one of my students. He's actually been my student and worked side by side with me in the choir for 15 years. His name is Josh Petty. He did his bachelor's degree at Butler, studied with me, did his master's degree at Butler, then taught for 5 years at Zionsville Public Schools, and then now has been at the choir for, I think, nearly 5 years. So he's been at my side for 15 years. So mm-hmm. He's the logical person to take over. He's well-prepared. He's energized. He's enthused. He understands what our priorities are, what the mission is. And we thought, well, the 30th anniversary, that's a very good time to do that. I'm getting up there. I'll be 70 next year. And so he's ready, and I think the timing is right.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Henry Leck, who is retiring at the end of this month, sort of retiring. We just established this. It's more like a transition to a new role with the Indianapolis Children's Choir. He is the founder and artistic director of the Children's Choir. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Marie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Marie, welcome to the program.
Hi, good to be here.
It's good to have you here. What's on your mind?
I just want to say thank you to Henry. My daughter's currently a member of ICC, has been for about 8 years, and I know that he knows this, but he has given her the world through music, and I am so grateful for this program and what it's meant to our family, particularly to our daughter.
When you say he's given her the world, I'm going to make him, because these are things he can't say about himself without appearing immodest. What do you mean by that, Marie?
Well, first of all, just the exposure to the incredible quality of music education that she's gotten in the program, the exposure to composers, to new works, to the world literally, in that she's traveled internationally twice and sang at Carnegie Hall. How many kids get to do that? I was a music educator in a very under-resourced area of the country. When I moved to Indianapolis, I was kind of blown away, and then to be able to have my children be a part of such an incredible program is really life-altering in a positive way. So she will never be the same, and we are better for having been ICC.
Well, thank you very much for calling and sharing.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Thank you, Marie.
So let's go back to the beginning here.
Okay.
What prompted you to found the Children's Choir? I mean, what?
Well, it's an interesting story.
What was the inspiration?
Had just been called by the dean and asked to. I actually never applied. He asked me to come and teach at Butler University. I was the assistant conductor of the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir, and I was also planning to start my doctorate at IU that fall. When I discovered children's choirs, I had worked with professional musicians and adults and all of that, taught high school orchestra and choirs and church choirs. But I discovered that there's an enormous level of artistry in young people. And that happened when the Chicago Children's Choir was coming to town and asked me to host them. And there was just incredible singing. And I thought, well, we don't have anything like that in Indianapolis. We have some good school choirs. We have some good church choirs. But there was nothing in the city that would draw kids from all social, economic, racial, religious, geographic backgrounds into one artistic voice. I thought, I think I'm going to start a children's choir in this city. And it just so happened that was right before the Pan Am Games. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Lilly Endowment. They were offering grants for organizations to create some kind of activities for the youth to become involved in the Pan Am Games. And so I put together a grant proposal, actually through the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir, and said, well, we could sing at the opening ceremonies and we could sing at the closing ceremonies, and that would get our kids in Indianapolis involved in the Pan Am Games. And Lilly thought that was a valid notion. They funded the choir with a $25,000 grant in 1986, and we were off and running. We did sing at the opening ceremonies with Disney up here, about 800 singers together, and we sang at the closing ceremonies a gospel version of Back Home Again in Indiana, and we've been singing ever since.
Why do you think people responded to it in the fashion of it? Because you probably do have a count of how many alumni there are, but the number has to astound you at this point.
Well, people ask, how many lives have you affected? How many kids have been in the program? We honestly don't know. I know it's well over 10,000, but that's what we counted at the 25th anniversary, so I don't actually know. But I think what draws people to the Children's Choir is just what Marie was expressing by phone, that when you expose kids to high levels of artistry, it changes their lives. And I've said again and again throughout the tenure of this experience that we don't really teach music. We teach kids, and we change lives one song at a time. Mm-hmm. And that's been, I think, the impetus for people wanting to be involved.
When you say we teach kids, we change lives one song at a time, What were your goals for the children's choir when you started doing this? I mean, I know it's a long time ago now, 30 years,
and
there's a lot of, there have been a lot of lessons learned along the way and a lot of life lived.
Well,
but can you go back to that person and figure out what you wanted to do?
Yes, I can. People have often asked me the question, did you have any idea that this was going to become the largest and one of the best children's choirs in the world? I said, no, I didn't have a clue. When I started, I thought, well, I'm going to start my doctorate. I'm teaching at Butler University. If I could get maybe 75 kids interested in singing, that would be a neat thing to do for kids. And we started with over 200, and it's grown every year since. And that's been pretty remarkable. So my goals and objectives when I started were pretty minimal compared to now.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did, with those initial ones, what did you hope they would get out of the experience?
Well, I've always felt if I could lift kids' lives through music so that they could feel better about themselves, so that they could gain self-confidence, so that they could be touched by the magic and the mystery of music, that was my goal. Whether it affected 5 kids or 15 or 25 or 40, that's really what I wanted to do in the beginning. And it's happened.
We are talking with Henry Leck, who's the founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. He's retiring at the end of the sort of retiring at the end of this month. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Stephen has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Hi there. How's it going?
Pretty well. What's on your mind?
Well, first I just wanted to say hi and thank you to Henry Leck. I'm one of those kids whose lives were affected and changed for the better for being a part of the program. And I sang in the choir in the late 80s and early 90s, and just wanted to say, you know, what it meant to me, you know, the things that come to mind, education, discipline, exposure to culture through travel, and just long-lasting friendships with fellow singers. And then I had a question for Henry. I know a lot of my alumni friends have kids who are starting to go through the programs, and I just wanted to see if he would comment on just the amount of pride that he must have for his students having kids and sending them through the program.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Stephen.
Sure.
First of all, Stephen, what's your last name?
Stephen Scarborough.
Oh, I thought so. I thought I recognized your voice.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, you've been a great support of the choir, you and your sister and your whole family. Yeah.
Thanks very much for the call, Stephen.
Absolutely.
Well, it is with enormous pride that I start to see alumni come back with their kids in tow. You know, years ago, I remember recording City Called Heaven, and I walked on the hall last night, and there's Jeff Sherrill, who sang that solo, and there's his kid in the choir. So it gives me enormous feeling of pride and joy to know that what was important enough for them then is now important enough for them to bring their kids.
When did you begin to think, okay, this is becoming something? Because it sounds like your ambitions for the choir were reasonably modest at the beginning.
Yes, that's
when
right.
When did you have to take the step back and reevaluate and realize, oh, this is a lot larger than I thought it was going to be?
It happened in a couple of major events. I think that the first one was after we had sung the Pan Am Games and we sang the opening ceremonies for the International Violin Competition at the IMA. We were invited to sing for the National Music Educators Conference, MENC, which was being held the next year in Indianapolis. And while when we sang there, we became part of a national stage. And so that kind of put us on the map really fast. And then a few years later, actually in the early 90s, we were invited to sing at ACDA, the National Choral Directors Convention, in San Antonio, Texas. And that was an astonishing performance. There was a 13-minute standing ovation by 6,000 choral directors. And I knew then that we had a tiger by the tail.
Well, it has to. Was that one of the best memories you've got of this, or
well, I have, tons,
have there been too many? Too
them.
Many to catalog here.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, they're wonderful memories. I can rattle on for hours about that.
Well, so it sounds like actually it did take off pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Was one of the big challenges then kind of managing the growth?
Yes. In the first full year, I think it was about October, we were singing at Market Square Arena, and this woman came up to me and said, you know what? You're a great musician, but your organizational skills, they need some help. She said, you have three different call times for this event. I'll come as a volunteer halftime. I'll work 20 hours a week and help you. And that was the beginning of the growth.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Henry Leck, who is the founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. He is stepping down, I was going to say retiring, but he's going to continue in other capacities with the Children's Choir. Rather than me recite the contact information for the show again, I'm going to be quiet and ask you to listen a little bit to the Children's Choir, selections of the Children's Choir, as we go to a break. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. You are listening to selections from the Indianapolis Children's Choir because today we are talking with Dr. Henry Leck. He is, of course, the founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. He's stepping down as artistic director on April 30th, but continuing in other capacities with the organization through the end of this fiscal year in one capacity and then moving to another one for 4 years after that. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can find us on Facebook at No Limits at WFYI.org or on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Morgan has done and send us an email. And our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. And I'm assuming normally we don't do last names over the air, but since specifically that Morgan has said, Henry, it's Morgan Reese. You know how much you have changed my life. Your program brought me friends I'm still close with today, 7 years after graduating from the Indianapolis Youth Chorale. I have had world experience, Germany, Austria, Ireland, Canada, Russia, even the Czech Republic. My life would not be what it is today without you. My appreciation for music and the world around me would not be so great if it wasn't for you. You are my idol and my role model. Thank you, Morgan Reese.
Thanks, Morgan.
That's really got to make you feel good.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to admit, I'm going to give you a second here. And I'm moved just reading something like that, and it's not directed, it's me. Yeah. It's got to feel, touch you really profoundly.
Well, you know, I've taught teachers for years and years. I was at Butler for 27 years as a professor, and I think the only thing a teacher wants to do is change lives and get people to love the stuff you love. And when you hear things like that from Morgan and other students, it's very fulfilling. It kind of makes the desire what a teacher has fulfilled.
So walk me through what the experience would be like for a young person who comes to the Indianapolis Children's Choir. What are the expectations? What is the work like? Because obviously it has a transformative effect on these folks. We've got some of them who are 25 years after they were participating are still speaking of it as if it were, you know, happened 5 minutes ago.
Well, I think it's different for every kid. It's more life-transforming for some than others, I think. It's also different for the age of the child. You know, we have an early childhood program for toddlers, and if they can just enjoy the process of music, that's what we do there. Or a little later, they learn steady beat or high and low or loud and soft. And then, you know, when we get them into the prep program, they start to learn notation and start to read music. And then, of course, that's different than an early children's choir experience where they perform maybe once or twice a semester. And then that's different than an advanced choir where they're going internationally and singing at very, very high-profile events within the city and outside of the city. And that's also different from the high school experience. So all the way through, though, there's one commonality, and that is we try to respect these kids as much as we possibly can. We try to lift them up. We try to make their life better through the process, and we try to have them come in contact with the greatness of being able to be in close contact with musical expression.
You used a phrase a little while ago that has been rattling around in my head ever since then, where you say you want to change lives one song at a time. That would suggest that you have to be very careful about the songs that you choose.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is very deliberate. So can you walk me through that process?
I think music should make people better. It should ennoble them. And when I'm choosing music, and I think this is true of all the people that work in the organization, we start by looking at text. And if the text has meaning and appropriateness that's going to make them feel different about life and about their own expression, that's great. Then, of course, we look at, is it appropriate in terms of their vocal ability or their range or their where they are reading or that sort of thing, so that when a piece is learned, it's not a song that they're going to forget and not like 3 weeks from now, but rather it's going to be something that maybe when they're 52 years old, they'll think of that melody again, and it'll bring them back to a memory of greatness.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Kathy. And again, our email address, if you want to join the conversation, is nolimits@wfyi.org. Kathy writes, I am so thrilled that Dr. Leck is staying on with ICC in several capacities outside of artistic director. In the 90s, our daughter Elaine was privileged to be a member of ICC. Thanks to Dr. Leck and the choir, she met so many wonderful kids from all over the city, got to travel to Australia and other places, sang such pieces as the Children's Crusade, and on and on. But maybe most important, you and Ruth Dwyer and ICC helped her get through awkward adolescence with her view of herself and the world forever changed. Know you are appreciated and remembered always. Thank you, Kathy.
You know, when you see the choir, it appears almost as if they're upper middle class and well off and perfectly balanced and perfectly content with life. But that's not the case. These kids come from many different kinds of experiences. And we're dealing largely with pre-adolescents and adolescent kids who go through enormous change in their lives, especially these days. And I've heard time and time and time again that it was the choir that held them together or kept them moving forward or kept them from making poor decisions. And the camaraderie that builds between the kids, they become the closest of friends. I can't tell you how many weddings I've seen where all the groomsmen and all the bridesmaids were ICC kids that they had been singing with in the eighth and ninth grade. And that kind of connection, feeling responsible to one another, feeling like there's a safety net and being around kids who care about the same things they care about, I think is really important during that enormously difficult transition time in young kids' lives.
What creates, and I'm going to toss this out to our audience as well as to you, because it sounds, I'm picking up enough of this that obviously, while you were a visionary and the founder, this thing obviously became its own entity and with a lot of different contributors. What is it about, because there are a lot of children's choirs, what is it about this one that made that cohesion, that sense of cohesion, so special and so unique?
Well, I think I'd be wrong to presume that we're the only choir that does that. I think children's choirs tend to do
but
this
we're the
throughout the
one of the highest profile, right?
Yeah, we are. We are. I think we're the largest in the United States, if not the world. And our whole organization has been a leader and a mentor to lots and lots of other choirs. I think when I started this choir in 1986, there were maybe six or eight choirs in the whole nation, and now there are probably 25 in Indiana. So, you know, we've been a leader in that respect. But you touched on something which I'd like to emphasize, and that this isn't a Henry Leck show.
Yeah,
this is Ruth Dwyer has been there for 29 years or 28 years, and Josh Petty has been there, and Sarah Hassler, and these are colleagues of mine who just absolutely love these kids and want to make their lives better. And I was looking a few weeks ago at the music staff and counting part-time and full-time people, there are about 48 on our staff now. So it's a team effort. And we've had a wonderful team through this whole process. And what has made this choir and this process so successful is a commonality of teaching. We're Kodai-based educators, a commonality of love for kids, a commonality of wanting this experience to be positive and be respectful and being one that, that builds character and builds self-esteem.
We've talked a lot, and we're going to talk more, about the way the children's choir has changed the lives of the children who are involved, those who are alums. How did it change your life?
Every rehearsal changes my life. And I can be in the doldrums complaining about this or that and walk into a rehearsal and my life changes. I mean, it's an interaction. It's a certain chemistry that occurs. That's not to say that every rehearsal is a good one or that every rehearsal you come out floating out in the air.
Yeah.
You know, we have to work hard and it takes discipline and all of that. But there's something that occurs in one's being when you look down and you see musical expression through the eyes of a kid. There's the connection that occurs there is beyond magical.
What is the most profound lesson you have learned from your tenure? Because it sounds like up until this point, in 1986, you were on a far more kind of traditional academic.
Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't take long for me to learn this lesson, and I've been teaching it ever since. But I was a believer in the concept that music was a craft, and you start learning it as a young child and you develop, maybe sometime around college level or beyond professional level, you become an artist. You know, it's once you've fully learned your craft. And I was proven wrong about that, that I think an 11-year-old child can be an artist. They can sing artistically. They can express artistic ideas in a far more sophisticated level than I ever dreamt was possible.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Dr. Henry Leck. He is the founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. He's sort of retiring here in a couple of weeks and as artistic director and is going to continue with ICC in other capacities for another 3 or 4 years. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Sarah Emily has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sarah Emily writes, "Hello, I just wanted to add my voice to countless others who have expressed the indelible impact that the ICC, under Mr. Leck's direction, has had on my life. Even though I was only a part of the ICC family for 5 years, very few compared to many of my friends, I know the trajectory of my life would have been quite different had I never been privileged with the opportunity. ICC encouraged me to explore music and in turn my world. It instilled dedication, professionalism, and acute attention to detail. Most of all, it gave me a second family, a place where I belonged. I was a student who came from a low-income, single-mother-headed household and would not have been able to take part in the ICC if it weren't for scholarships and the never-ending support of staff and directors in the choir. I wish Mr. Leck nothing but the best in the new phase in his career and hope that he is aware that thousands of children, many now adults, are forever changed by his passion for music and dedication to using it to touch the lives of children, families, and audiences across the globe."
Wow.
Again, that's got to feel good to hear.
Yeah.
So picking up on this point, you say, you know, when people view the children's choir, they see it as this almost bastion of the upper middle class, maybe even the upper class.
Right.
But in fact, there are children who come from all walks of life. And Sarah Emily makes reference here to the fact that scholarships allow a lot of low-income children.
Yeah.
How did you, you know, we started with the $25,000 from the Lilly Endowment in 1986, but that's not going to employ 48 people for long or take children's choirs to Australia and all sorts of other points on this globe to perform.
Right.
How did it grow to become the massive enterprise that it is right now?
Well, I have to say, And I've said this again and again, I have never felt a moment when this city didn't support this choir full-heartedly. I mean, we've sung for mayor's retirements and for a whole bunch of governor's inaugurations and opening of Circle Center Mall and the opening of a zoo. And I mean, whenever a major thing occurs in the city, the children's choir is there. We have a working partnership with the ISO and with the opera and so forth. And what does that mean? That means that people are engaged with the organization and have been willing to commit to supporting it. And I just can't tell you how many thousands and thousands of people give us money to help low-income kids or help kids that are underserved. So we do give scholarships. The two biggest misconceptions that go on is that people will see this professional-looking choir and say, oh, well, I don't think my kid can sing that. Well, I mean, oh, my gosh, those are wonderful singers. The truth is all a kid has to do is want to do it. Mm-hmm. And we'll teach them how to sing. Mm-hmm. They don't even have to match pitch. Mm-hmm. And yet the scholarship should never be a hurdle for them. It's hard to keep that going, but we do. When you talk about challenged kids, I can point to a professional singer in Boston who got on a bus on East 38th Street and rode it to Butler campus. Got there quite a bit early, did his homework, sat in my office, did the rehearsal, got back on a bus and went back home again. For year after year after year. And we have all kinds of kids that are so dedicated to this process and families who've been willing to be generous to help us support kids who need the help.
Well, it sounds like also though somewhere along the way, because this is your hour too, and we're going to talk. Yeah. You had to, in addition to picking up some educational and musical skills, some fundraising and leadership skills as well. Could you talk a little bit about that evolution?
Well, the fortunate thing, I don't mention this very often, but I was out of music for 10 years when I lived in Colorado and ran my own business. So when I started the children's choir, I knew what a double entry ledger system was and what a balance sheet was and an income statement was. And so I had a lot of business skills and development skills, and that's come in very handy because starting a children's choir, you can't just think about music. It's a 501c3 not-for-profit, and it had to get up and running with a board and with the fundraising and all of that. Thankfully, now we have a wonderful staff of people doing that, but in the beginning, it was just me.
And you know, we talk about all of these kids. Are there any kids that you cannot work with that have been difficult? Or are there kids like, you know, I mean, I have no musical ability at all. I couldn't hit a note with a high-powered rifle at close range. So, you know,
I could
just
teach you.
No, I doubt that. I seriously doubt that. Others have tried.
Are you asking, are there kids that are difficult? Of course there are. Have there been challenges with kids? Of course there are. Have we ever kicked a kid out? I don't remember of that. You know, what we want to do is find ways to help kids be better. And have some kids dropped out? Of course they have. It's not for every single kid. Sometimes conflicts come along. Sometimes they're more inclined to do sports only. But a lot of our kids do sports and do lots of other things too. So it's not a panacea. You know, it's real world. But I'd say the vast majority of kids have found it worthwhile.
How do you handle the discipline situations? I mean, you say you can't recall kicking a kid out. You want to make them feel better, but kids being kids, they're not always going to behave perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the best rule I've given my student teachers is don't embarrass a kid in front of the rest of the ensemble. If there's a problem, we talk privately afterwards and see if we can't change the behavior. And, you know, like any good teacher would, you try to build the relationship with the kid.
And, you know, when you're building that relationship, you know, how much time do you get to spend with each of these kids?
Well, that's a tough part because when 86 kids walk into the room, I mean, you have to divide your attention by 86 or by 100. In the high school choir, it's 103. So it's hard to get to know kids individually, but that happens before rehearsal and during breaks and after rehearsal and on tours, and we get to know each other as best we can.
We are talking with Henry Leck, the retiring artistic director and founder of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. As we head into this break, please listen to the work of his students, the Indianapolis Children's Choir. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits.
Love, love, love.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. Sounds you were just listening to came courtesy of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. Today's No Limits, we are talking with Henry Leck, who is the founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. He is assuming a new role starting April 30s, retiring as artistic director, but will be continuing in other capacities with the Children's Choir. We would be remiss if we didn't say that there are some events that coincide, obviously, with your retirement, a major performance on the 30th. Can we talk a little bit about that right now?
Yes, on the 30th of April, we are celebrating our 30th anniversary. And that's being done at Clues Hall at 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock with a VIP reception in between. So how do we mount this last important concert? We went to Lilly Endowment, who's been so supportive of us all those years, and we said, could we commission a major work? I selected a composer that I dearly love. He's really widely, widely loved. His name is Dan Forrest, and he's written a major work. It's 42 minutes long, called Jubilate Deo, which means praise to God. And it's going to be with a professional orchestra. It's coming down. One of my students, former students, conducts it in Chicago. They're coming down to play. And this music is so phenomenally beautiful. It's the movement one is in Latin, and it's very much like Copland or Bernstein. And then the second movement is in Hebrew and Arabic. And it's a setting of psalm texts. And the third movement is the 23rd psalm, but it's in Mandarin, Chinese, and with an arhu player from Indianapolis who's playing with the orchestra. The fourth movement is in Zulu, lots of drumming and lots of excitement. And that piece is just unbelievable. And then the next movement, the fifth movement, is so serene. It's so gorgeous. It's in Spanish. And it's with guitar and orchestra. The sixth movement is an alleluia, and the last movement pulls all those things together in a tumultuous end. But what do we do for the rest of the concert? Well, I reached out to fellow friends who are composers, and believe it or not, every single piece on this concert will be the premiere of a new work. There are about 15 composers who have written pieces for this concert. Many of them are coming in from all over the United States. So the concert starts with the young singers, then the intermediate singers, then the advanced singers in the first half. Second half, we're doing a Schubert piece, which has been arranged by one of our former accompanists who's also a composer, and then this big work, and then ending with a Mulholland piece. James Mulholland's a colleague of mine from Butler University. So it's going to be an extraordinary day musically.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a complicated performance. I mean, it's a challenge.
Yeah,
it stretches.
Yeah.
How do, I mean, you say you've got very young children doing this.
Yeah.
How do they meet that, you know, sort of that artistic challenge of stepping up to material? It sounds like it's pretty demanding, would be demanding for professionals of long standing.
Well, all of the material is appropriate for their age level. You know, the last piece in the program, the youngest children will sing parts of it, but that's a lot simpler than what the high school kids will be singing. So, you know, we're very concerned about making sure that the music is all appropriate for the levels that are singing. But that, as I said earlier, doesn't keep them from being artistic.
And how are they reacting to the emotional pieces of this, the fact that, you know, this is a significant change for the org, that they're presumably they are aware that you are stepping down as artistic director. What have the responses been there?
Well, I think the kids love Mr. Petty, and they're looking forward to working more with him. They love me, but they're ready for me to move on, I think. and they love the music. I think what's important about all of this is not Henry Leck, not just Petty, not ICC. It's the music and the kids. That's what's important, and that will keep going on.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Henry Leck, the founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir, who is retiring as artistic director on April 30th. If you would like to join the conversation, please send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Sarah has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. It looks like we just dropped Sarah. So,
sorry.
We'll see if we can get her back. It may be that she ran out of cell coverage or whatever.
Yeah.
So what are you doing anything for yourself after April 30? Because it sounds like you're continuing in other capacities. I mean, is there a moment? Have you carved out some time for yourself to say, oh, wow,
yeah,
you know, that's over. That was good. I really do want to reflect on this.
Things are pretty intense until the end of the summer. Lots of festivals. I've got the German tour and a festival in Canterbury Cathedral in London. And so forth. But it does slow down in the fall, although I am going to be in China teaching and conducting for about a week and a half. And I'm going to be in Italy in December. So, my wife and I, my wife of 47 years, I might say.
If you feel compelled to say thank you to her, right?
Yeah,
now,
I do. I really do. She has been, by the way, a part of this whole organization from the very beginning, been a teacher, a supporter, a conductor. And this organization could not have existed without the support of my wife and my family and her professional involvement as well. She's also a music teacher and a conductor. But we've just on the final stages of building a home in Bloomington, and we're going to move down there because my sister lives there and my daughter, one of my daughters, and my son-in-law, and two grandchildren. So we do plan to move more into a focus on family.
Again, it looks like we have got Sarah back. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi.
Hi, sorry.
Oh, that's fine. Hi, Dr. Leck.
Hi.
I played with the violin, the first violin section, on the New World Symphony Orchestra with your daughter.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Angela, I think, right?
Anya.
Anya. Yeah. Anya. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She was such a great person, and we had a lot of fun. And, you know, we used to joke about, was Dr. Leck always so serious? And she would say, oh, no, not at all. So we played, I remember, the Chichester Psalms.
Yes.
Which was by Leonard Bernstein, which was extremely difficult rhythm. And the choir was unbelievable. Now, I've seen the Chichester Psalms performed a few times, different places, actually, once in Israel. And I have to say, that performance with the ICC was one of the best I've ever heard. And these were just little kids. And there's a solo with a little boy. He was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know how you were able to get that out, that level of musicality out of those kids, because, you know, we were barely hanging on, you know, trying to get the rhythm right and do all that. And we were just amazed.
Sarah, were you in the?
I just wanted to say that.
Were you in the orchestra when we did the Mozart Requiem?
That
was about that same time.
That was in. It might have been. I was in a few different orchestras. So
yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, anyway, Chichester's a beautiful work. I still love it very much, and I think the current conductor, the new artistic director of the New World Orchestra, is Adam Bodoni, and he was playing trombone in that orchestra at that time. Now he's conducting them. And they just performed at Carnegie Hall this last weekend. It's a great organization.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Well, Sarah, thank
Susan
you very
much. Sitterman was...
Susan's a great pal.
She was great. And you were going through your doctorate during that time, I believe.
Right.
A lot of stuff going on, and she was... Highly, highly recommended all of us if we wanted to go be in the choir as well, so that would help with our musicality as well, you know, with the voice of the strings.
It was pretty cool. My daughter was playing in her orchestra, and her daughter was singing in my choir.
Sarah, well, thank you very much. Thanks very much for the call, Sarah. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Good luck with everything.
Thanks, Sarah.
So I want to, when she talks about, you know, these very young, Sarah mentions these very young kids mastering, you know, what is a difficult piece of music.
Yeah.
I mean, does that make them feel like?
The only limitation to a potential of a child is the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
The only limitation. And actually, my wife used to say this to me, you know, Henry, the only reason you're so successful is you don't know the limitations of kids. Because we just took on whatever we could take on and with remarkable results.
But I would think there's got, because some of these kids, it sounds like, come from circumstances where they haven't had a whole lot of success in life.
Yes, that's right.
And they're
that's
not. Right. And, you know, I mean, we've been listening to this, and they're calling in, and they're saying, yeah. you know, this changed my life. This yeah. was a transformative experience for me.
Yeah.
Got to believe that some of it is that they get a sense of their own possibilities
yes.
from
yes.
this.
A wise man once said, if you can give a kid one thing that they're really good at, they have a chance at life. And for many kids, this was the one thing, not all of them, many of them have zillions of things they can do well, but for many kids, this was the one thing that would lift them forward.
What's that moment like to watch as a teacher?
Well, you never see it happen immediately. It's a long, gradual process. You know, there are times when you can see it in their eyes, when the lights come on, or when, you know, you finish an extraordinary performance. I have a photograph of a concert that we just did in Europe, and the kids are just crowded all around me, and you can see the joy and the excitement and feeling of a tumultuous success, and that's really cool to see.
We are talking with Henry Leck, who is founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. He's going to be retiring as artistic director at the end of this month. Art, welcome to the program.
Welcome. My thought was that I mean, it made me think. I just heard Handel's Messiah again. Music generally, but choral, because it's participative, to me it has unparalleled power. Such a powerful medium. It stimulates great passion. It's an immensely positive force. It creates desire. Changes one's focus and attention, and creates bonding between the people, between the choir members as well as the staff and the director. And it seems to me as though there's tremendous potential almost in the area of music therapy, whether it be kids in prisons, adults in prisons, adults in society, parents that aren't very good parents, all kinds of things. This goes on and on. It's a tremendous force for positive change.
Thanks very much for the thought and the insight there, Art. We will take it up. So I'll take the...
And the long-term unemployed, perhaps, yeah. too.
Thanks again.
You never know. I mean, it changes people's attitude toward life. Your discussion has proven that point.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
there's no question about that. We did a project a few years ago where we had some of our staff go out to the prison in Plainfield on Saturday mornings because, you know, this was with male prisoners. They often lose contact of parenting skills or of their children who aren't, you know, so connected. And so we would bring their children into the prison and work with ORF instruments so that the fathers were working with their kids, and it allowed them to have an extra 6 hours per month of interaction. And music became the vehicle then for them to reconnect with their own kids. So it is a very powerful force.
We've talked an awful lot about the kids and sort of the growth of the organization. Yeah. Is there any other activity or form of human expression that could have been as effective in building this as music, do you think?
Well, that's a good question, John. I think Art's call really points to a poignancy that when you're in a choir and you're singing words together and you're standing closely next to one another, there's a certain kind of human bonding and energy that occurs. Some people have said even hearts start beating in a simultaneous way. Certainly the sense of increasing a phrase and decreasing and expressing certain specific notions bonds the human spirit in a way that you don't quite get maybe in an orchestra or a band or a soccer team or, you know, a paint class or something of that sort. So I think there is something unique about the choral experience.
So, you know, if we got Republicans and Democrats in Congress to sing together, maybe things would be a little bit better.
I think that's a really good idea. I said when George Bush led the troops into Iraq, I said, now, if we would spend as much money on choral music, if we spent on wars in the last 15 or 20 years, I wonder what the world would be like. I bet it'd be a lot different.
So I have to ask this, because obviously this has been a stunning success from every perspective. But, you know, it's a human enterprise. Do you have any regrets, anything that you didn't get done that you wanted to, that you worked at some, you know, some stretch of the mountain that you just weren't able to climb?
Well, you know, I have to be pretty darn happy with what has occurred. I mean, we've sung so many times in the Vatican and in Canterbury Cathedral and the Sydney Opera House, and we've recorded with the Moscow Chamber Orchestra. We've done a lot. Is there more we could do? You bet. And that's going to be for Josh to do. I'm happy with what we've done. I'm proud of our kids. I'm proud of the city of Indianapolis. I just think we're a very solid organization right now, and there's a very bright future in front of us.
You've listed a lot of special places.
Yeah.
What was your favorite? Where's your favorite place to perform? Either, you know, it can be, I'll allow you to duck out on, you know, making judgments about people or cultures. What's just maybe technically the best venue?
We've had so many great performances in wonderful concert halls. But I think when all is said and done, I just love performing in Carnegie. I've probably done 25 performances there, and I'm booked with a company to do 2 performances per year, and I always look forward to them because it's such a clear and such a soft hall to sing in. It's a good hall.
We are talking with Dr. Henry Leck. Lane, welcome to the program. You've got about 30 seconds to ask a question or make a comment.
Well, I just wanted to call in and on behalf of the Indiana Music Education Association, again, thank Henry for all of his work and his gift of artistic talent to not only the ICC in Indianapolis, but to the entire state of Indiana. Henry's been a gift, and it's been great to work with you, Henry.
Thank you, Lane. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much for the call, Lane. Really appreciate it. So how long is it going to take to come back to Earth after all of that? Because obviously you're leaving. You've done spectacular things.
Yeah.
And people say nice things about you.
Yeah,
but
that's really every comment is so appreciated. But it won't take long, and I'll be quite anonymous, I think, in living in Bloomington and that sort of thing. Honestly, I get a little embarrassed by it because my goal was never really to make myself be important. It was to help change kids' lives.
I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank you for your years of service to the Children's Choir. My guest has been Henry Leck, founder and artistic director of the Indianapolis Children's Choir. I'd also like to thank our listeners. Welcome them back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about Indiana's new abortion law here on No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.